Hey, what's going on, Tech?
Blog
what's going
Talk
on?
Radio.
Tex, what's going on?
Nothing, just ready to do it, man. Got a lot of good stuff today. A lot of good football talk. Let's roll.
All right, man. Well, like I said, the objective of our show, we're giving raw, unedited, uncensored, unfiltered, objective conversation on major college and pro football. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on this week. I know we're all excited about talking about it, and we're going to get to our college football right now. The first thing is, what happened as of last week, Tyrann Mathieu, he decided to go into rehab in Houston, Texas. John Lucas, NBA legend, he's scheduled to work with him and try to get him rehabilitated, towards being a sober and clean person going forward. Now, what I want to know is, with Tyrann Mathieu, him taking a year off, do you think he's going to return as a good college player? And what exactly do you think is his pro prospects for the future? Shottown, let me know what's up.
Well, I applaud the young man, Tyrann Mathieu, you know, getting himself checked out, getting help. You know, your health is more important, you know, long-term and short-term. And, you know, hopefully, he overcomes the substance abuse problems he's had, you know, doing rehab, and definitely, you know, hopefully he'll be a better person. He might be a learning experience because, again, this man is young. He's still a kid. So he might come out to be a much better person and also come out being, you know, a much better football player as well, possibly.
Oh, you think he's going to have a better season than he did? He could be a better, potentially better football player than what we've seen him already?
Yeah, it's a strong possibility seeing something
wow.
that he loved, seeing something he loved being taken away, not playing football for a whole year, the way it looks like right now. You know, he'll learn to appreciate it more, not playing something that he truly loves to play is football. So, of course, he's going to probably be more hungrier and ready to be back on that field once he play again, for the 2013 year.
What about his pro prospects? What do you think about his pro prospects?
I mean, pro prospects, like Tex was saying last week, I mean, the man, he's a playmaker. You know, he got some speed. Only thing, you know, that could hurt him is to say he has a real bad injury. But, you know, as a pro prospect, I mean, the man has a chance, you know, his chances are still good. Let's say, you know, after rehab, he decided that he wants to forego his college career and enter the NFL, some team probably will give him a chance. He might not be a first-round pick. It depends on how he does in the workouts and, you know, in that 40 as well. But, hey, he still could be drafted in a later round. But if I was him, focus on, you know, getting your health together and see what he could do back on the college field. I mean, I would take that alternative. Let's say, you know, if any other top school, you know, shy away from him, which I don't highly doubt it, but let's say a possibility, then, yeah. But other than that, hey, his focus on is getting himself together and his life together.
Callie, what you think, bro?
I think he's going to be sending out a message, you know, that's going to be pretty positive to other people in similar situations, because to me, he's showing that it's not so much about the football as it is about himself. You know, you got to, you know, a lot of these cats, you know, they get in the same situation. Like I said, they'll go to a D2 school or, you know, an FBS school, and, you know, basically they won't address the issues that they were, you know, that they were dealing with. And I think that, you know, by him taking this season off and, you know, trying to get himself in a good place, you know, I think it's not only good for him, but, I think it'll be good for, you know, football in general, for a guy to, you know, to say, you know, hey, this is a problem. I need to deal with this. Then I need to come back and get on the football field.
Well, my thing is, do you think he's a potential Pro Bowler?
I look at, like I said, he's a playmaker, exciting guy. Things happen when he's on the field. He's a guy you have to have on the field. I don't know if he's going to be playing corner in the NFL, though, because of his size. I would like to see what he was going to do without, without the other on the other side of him. I think maybe he could be like a safety, you know, like a rover type player. That's actually what I see him as. I don't really, like I said, I don't see him as becoming a lockdown corner on the NFL. I didn't, you know, any means.
Okay,
is he
like maybe an every? Well, let me coin the question. Do you think maybe he's an every down player in the, on defense?
like I say, if you find the right spot for him, he's a guy who's, you know, he makes plays when he's on the field. You know, so I think, like I say, I think you have to have him on the field. He can increase your defense. You know, he can only help your defense. He can't hurt you. You know, and I think, like I say, you know, the way offenses are changing, you know, I think, you know, our defense could, you know, very well, you know, like I said, you know, make a chance to put a guy like that on the field full time.
Okay. So, well, Tex, you got any opinion on this?
No, see any reason why Tyrann Mathieu can't come back and play at the level he's capable of playing. As far as his prospects in the NFL, like we said last week, he's just a playmaker. Now he gets to the league, he'll have to fit. Of course, you'd like to see him get a little bigger. He's about 5'8", 5'9", 175. So, you know, you want to get him up a couple of pounds so he'll be able to withstand the beating that he's going to take when he gets to the next level. But for a team like Green Bay or Pittsburgh, even the Jets, you know, maybe the Dolphins, you know, he's a fit with certain teams. He can help teams out in the NFL. There's always room for a guy that can make, that'll always be around the ball, that has a nose for it, and can give you what he gives you on special teams. Definitely a way to win ball games.
Okay. Now, what I want to get into now is West Virginia. Now, a lot of people say they are under the radar team. They're moving to the Big 12, and they have a very good quarterback, as we know. Now, a lot of people think they are a potential BCS team. I want to know, what's your opinion on that? Like, do you think they can beat, like, the Oklahomas and the Texas or whatnot? Is their schedule favorable in order to do that? Do you think they're capable of doing that? I'm going to start with you, Tex. What do you think?
I don't see them beating, like, a major, any of the, like, the big-time schools, like USC, OU.
And,
go ahead.
And I want to interrupt you slightly. They go to Texas. Before I want to make sure everybody clear. They have their first four games are Marshall, James Madison, Maryland, and Baylor, and then they have to go to Texas and play them. And then, you know, Texas, Texas is kind of shady here. And then they got Texas Tech, Kansas State at home, TCU at home, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma and Stillwater. And then they play Oklahoma, which is projected to be the best team in the Big 12, in Morgantown. So a lot of people think they can just run the table if they can beat Oklahoma. And I'm going to let you continue with there. So what do you think, Tex?
Well, just to the eye, I don't see them running the table on any schedule and making a BCS bowl. But with the way the Big 12 is, I mean, it's highly possible just for the simple fact that nobody plays defense in the Big 12, and West Virginia has an explosive offense, and has one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. So they could go into Austin. They could take care of business there. And, you know, OU has been known to, you know, screw up their own chances sometimes of doing what they need to do, and they can probably go into OU and win. I wouldn't bet on it, though, but I think they are kind of a sleeper, kind of a dark horse to hit the BCS title game.
Okay. Shatown, what you think?
Well, West Virginia is not a Cinderella team, the team that's been on the radar quite some time now. Hey, they can come in. I would kind of have to disagree. They can come in and pull off an upset on Oklahoma. I wouldn't even call it upset, because West Virginia, they've been a team that's been there, you know, and they've been in some bowl games. I think that's a team that got a Heisman, you know, quarterback finals possibly in Geno Smith, and they score points. They put up points on the board. And like Tex said last week, you know, the Big 12 don't have no defenses, so this team is powered to score a lot of points. So, hey, I think they're a team that could be up there challenging, you know, some of the powerhouse Big 12 teams like Oklahoma and Texas. Like I said last week, I think Oklahoma State and Baylor are going to drop off this year.
Well, do you think Geno Smith is better than Landry Jones? Put Geno Smith at Oklahoma and put Landry Jones
He's not better than Landry Jones.
You don't think he's better than Landry Jones?
I think he's a better athlete than Landry Jones because he's mobile. But I mean, it depends on what type of quarterback you want. If you want a straight guy who's mobile and has the tools, then yeah, Geno Smith. If you want someone just a traditional pocket quarterback, it's Landry Jones. So really, it depends on what type of quarterback you want, and I guess the kind of offense you want to run too. So
really,
you can't go wrong with either.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, Geno Smith had a 65% completion percentage, 31 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. I mean, I think Geno Smith might be up there with Landry Jones, in my opinion. I think he may be, I mean, I don't know. I just think he's not getting the praise for what he is. I think he's an exceptional quarterback. I think he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. Let's just put it that way. And Cali, Mike, I want to get your take on this.
I look at that West Virginia, they're a good team. The Big 12 isn't the Big East, though. I mean, they're going to have, like I said, they got some stiff competition. Geno Smith is good. You know, they got excellent wide receivers. Running game's kind of suspect, but, you know, with the passing offense like that, you know, you're not going to run the ball much anyway. But like I say, I don't think the transition is going to be that easy for them where they're just going to come in and dominate. I think, you know, like I say, to me, Texas is going to be a loss. Oklahoma is going to be a loss. Best possibility is I see them happen to 10-2. Or, you know, ended up 8-4.
Okay. Well, I have them as a dark horse. I think they're going to beat Texas. I think they're going to beat Texas at Texas. That's the upset I have. And I think they could potentially beat Oklahoma in Morgantown. I think they are to make a run. I think they are. And I think Geno Smith, even though he doesn't have any praise, I think he's just as good and maybe slightly better than Landry Jones. That may be crazy for a lot of people to think I'm saying that, but if you look at the statistics, and I understand Geno Smith in the Big East and Landry Jones in the Big 12, but allegedly, according to text, the Big 12 don't even play any defense. So, the Big East, they're kind of a black and blue division anyway, but if you look at the statistics here, Geno Smith had a 65.7% completion percentage. Landry Jones, he has, it looks like here, a 63.2% completion percentage. He had 29 touchdowns, Landry Jones that is, 29 touchdowns and 15 interceptions, and Geno Smith had 31 touchdowns and 7 interceptions of last year. So, I mean, I think West Virginia's prime, man, to make a nice run in the
Look at this also. You got to look, Mike Stoops is back in Oklahoma. You know, that's going to dramatically change their defense. When the Stoops brothers was together in Oklahoma and things was good, they were going to national championships every other year, it seems like. So, you know, you got to figure him being back there. Like I said, Landry Jones' numbers might not have been that good last year, but, you know, they did lose Ryan Broyles. Like I said, Oklahoma's going to be a tough team next year. I can't see West Virginia fully, you know. I can't see them really beating them at all, honestly, to tell you the truth.
Understandable, even though Oklahoma has to go there now, and that's a tough place to play. Morgantown, that's a tough place to play. So, I mean, I understand, though, Oklahoma, from an offensively and defensive standpoint, I see that they're a lot more talented, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. I think Oklahoma's a little bit more talented. I think they're the only school in Texas, that kind of really play defense in the Big 12. In terms of the talent to play the defense, but I think when you go in a hostile environment like Morgantown, and when you got Geno Smith, who's a big game kind of a player, he's a big time player. I think Oklahoma's going to have a tough time going there in a late November game. I kind of sensing it.
Also, Carvell, I wouldn't call West Virginia a dark horse team. It's a team I think they already made a name for themselves quite some time. So I wouldn't even put them as a dark horse team. I think it's a team. You put them up there, you know, they going to a new conference. But, hey, they already – and that's the reason why they're in a new conference. They need more competition. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So I think they're going to be a team, probably a powerhouse team in the Big 12.
Okay. Definitely. I want people to call in. Call in number is 347-237-5539. If you got any opinions on this, you can chime in. I want to move on to a little to the next topic here. Now, Boise State has, I guess, in college basketball, they call them the mid-majors. So I call it, I'll use that word for college football here. Boise State has been sort of the mid-major of college football the past few years. They've been the BCS team that generally goes to the BCS. I mean, not the BCS team, but they've been a team that goes to the BCS from non-BCS schools, non-automatic qualifying schools, to enter it. Is there going to be a team that's going to emerge outside since TCU is going to the moving conferences, and Boise State I don't think has done it as of yet. Is there going to be a team that's going to emerge and sort of be that Boise State caliber, sort of be to be capable of going to a BCS game? Tex, what do you think?
If anybody does it, it'll be Boise State, well-coached team. They do a good job coaching their quarterbacks, getting them ready to run that system. Always have a few guys that are going to play in the NFL, not a roster like, you know, other schools we know about, but they always have some players that will get drafted in the NFL. Other than them, I don't really see any teams like that. I don't think it's a couple of years ago where you had somebody like Auburn or Oregon that could sneak up in there and get in there when there was, you know, when the big teams were kind of, you know, having a down year trying to replace players. I don't see that as being this year. I think the top is cut and dried, and I think those are the contenders for BC to play in a BCS title game. Don't really see any like middle type teams like Boise State or, you know, teams like that, or Southern Florida or Southern Mississippi or something like
Southern Florida.
You know, something like that. I don't see them getting in there like that because I think the teams that are traditionally strong, I think they're very, very strong, and that kind of locks a lot of other teams out.
All right. Hold on real quick. I'm going to get everybody else's opinion. I got a few calls here. The first call, 407. 407? 407.
Yeah.
All right. Chime in. This is CMC Firestorm. Chime in. Hello? 407.
Hello?
You there? 407? All right, hold, we're going to have to put you on hold. There's another call here. 813.
Yes.
Yes, what's going on?
What's up?
813, CMC Firestorm.
Another call here. Tony Watley. 813.
What's going on, Tony? What you got to say, Tony? What's going on?
I'm thinking that Boise State, I think Boise State is going to make a run. I don't know that they're going to be able to take it all this year, but I really do believe that because of all the conference changes and all of the things that are going on with all of the teams switching, it helps some and it hurts others. But because Boise's in the Mountain West, they're always going to just dominate the Mountain West. And as long as they're in the Mountain West and they don't have to play anybody, that puts them in the national championship hunt every year. And I really think that with all of the moves, we got a very good chance of seeing somebody get upset by a team they've never played because they're not used to playing them, and that gives Boise State their chance to get in.
Any opinions on that, Tex, Mike?
Think about it. What major changes have there been? I mean, you got A&M, you have Missouri going to the SEC. I mean, what's what we're knowing? Now, I totally agree with what you're talking about. Yeah, Boise State, they'll run through the Mountain West. Might be in a BCS game, but they'll have to go undefeated. You got USC, you got LSU, you got Bama, you got Florida State. I don't – these teams that are switching conferences, I don't see – and I get where you're coming from. These other teams are – this is the first time that they're seeing what this team does. But the top teams in the nation, the top teams in these conferences are so strong. A&M and Missouri don't have a chance. West Virginia has a slight chance because West Virginia is competitive anyway. It's not the Big East. It is the Big 12. But right off top, they might have the most explosive offense in the Big 12. So if they can pull off one against UT or OU, then maybe they can get there. Now, Boise would definitely, it's going to take an unbelievable amount of focus for them to go ahead, run the table in the Mountain West, because if they lose one game, they're not going to a BCS game. Now, if they
win, what I'm looking at is the fact that when you stop to think about it, the SEC has gotten so used to playing certain teams, and you get so used to the certain teams being at the top that somebody may underestimate a Missouri or may underestimate a Texas A&M, and before you know it, those LSUs and those Alabamas at the top might get that one loss in the SEC. Once that happens, Boise's always going to start out in the top five, and they're never going to lose. And because you had an all-SEC championship last year, they're going to make sure that doesn't happen again. So they're going to make sure one of those two teams is below Boise State. So it's going to be a situation of where it might be a USC and a Boise State in the national championship just because someone might take Texas A&M and Missouri as a joke and end up losing on one day.
Well, with Texas A&M in Missouri, they don't, Tony, they just, you got to understand, don't have the athletes to compete in the SEC just yet. I get the whole thing with them being a surprise and being able to sneak up on somebody, but just first off, they just don't have the athletes to compete yet. As far as Boise State is concerned, they always have NFL players on the roster on a neutral field. They, at most of the time, they can beat anybody in the nation. So I definitely agree with that. But as far as A&M and Missouri, just don't. I mean, they'll be lucky to win 6-7 games this year in the SEC.
Well, I agree. But the thing about it too, gentlemen, Boise State was a play away of possibly going to maybe that BCS National Championship. The dang kicker, man, losing that in overtime like that. Two kicks. And that was a BCS National Championship dream goodbye. One play.
Right. And
right.
If you look at the schedule of the two top teams, you look at Alabama's schedule, as much as everybody's so sure that they're going to run it, Alabama plays Michigan in their very first game. They play Arkansas at Arkansas. They play Tennessee at Tennessee. They play LSU at LSU. Those are not going to be just walk-away games for Alabama to call themselves going and taking a national championship, because you know nowadays that it only takes one loss to be out of it nowadays. LSU is in the same situation.
I think that those first two games for Alabama, I think, are favorable. I think Alabama's probably going to smoke on Arkansas, because I think Arkansas is going to drop with Bobby Petrino, you know, not being the head coach there. So they're going through transitioning, and I still think Alabama is just a head above better than Tennessee.
All right, hold on. I don't want to interject here. Tony, I'm going to have to put you on hold real quick, yo, because there's another caller coming in. And I'm going to have to put you on hold, and I'm going to let the other caller come in. All right?
Okay.
This is 407, CMT Firestone.
What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? What you got to say,
Steve,
man?
This is Steve from Orlando. Hey, I got to say this. I mean, the question was, who you think could be another Boise State? I'm going to put it to you like this. The team that y'all are not looking at is Louisville. Louisville has not a pure shot to get a BCS bowl because West Virginia's not there anymore. They could just sneak right in. They got some of the best players from Florida, because when Randy Shevlin left Miami, almost all their recruiting class went to Louisville. This is Charlie Strong's third year. I'm telling you, y'all better watch out for Louisville. I ain't going to say they're going to go all the way, but I guarantee you You will hear about them at the end of the year. Trust.
Interesting, because you, well, do you think they're better than USF, South Florida?
Yeah, because USF hasn't had no consistency. No matter what you say, nah, I don't see it. I mean, I'm here. I see them boys, man. From the buzz that's around here is Louisville, because they got all them Northwestern players just like Miami did, but they got the players that's going to do something. All them boys are playing. They all starting. They ready. Teddy Bridgewater in the second season. I don't know if you saw Louisville last year what they did, but they tied for the Big East Conference Championship. And you know what I mean? I think they ain't got nobody to play, man.
I agree with the caller, though. Charlie Strong, man, hey, he came from Florida being a head coach, and he did a lot of recruiting. He got a lot of recruits down there for Urban Meyer, you know, because he was one of the top assistants of charge of recruiting. So he's getting recruits being at Louisville. And also, I think South Florida losing that coach, Levitt, I think that kind of hurt them too, because, you know, they started getting it going, and, you know, he ain't the coach there no more. So I agree about Louisville.
Yeah, I think the caller's making a good point. Like I said, Charlie Strong, he's always going to put a good team out there. And plus, they got Teddy Bridgewater. That dude, he's a fantastic football player. He did a lot better last season than I thought he would in his first year, and like, he's only going to get better. Like I said, I can see a couple All-American teams for him in years to come. And if they keep getting talent from Florida, you know, the sky's going to be the limit for those guys.
I think Charlie Strong was, you know what I'm saying, undervalued at Florida. I think they really missed him, because you saw when he left how that defense kind of not wasn't the same when he was there. So I think he was a guy people don't really feel to be missing at times. You know, you hear all about Herb, you know, he did a heck of a job there. But I think Charlie Strong, you know, he did a lot.
All right. Well, yeah, this is good conversation here, good conversation. I need to move to the next topic here. Steve, I will put you on hold because I really want you to listen to this one of these topics we're going to talk about in the future in a few minutes. I'm going to have to put you on hold, though, okay, man?
All right,
no doubt. All right, now, the next topic I want to talk about is Texas A&M and Missouri. They're coming to the SEC, and I want you to know, what exactly do you think they're going to do when they get to the SEC? You think they're going to make a buzz? They're going to have some upsets? Do you think they're just going to lose all the games that they're supposed to lose? I want to get your outlook on that. Tex, what's your outlook on that?
I don't think they're going to lose all the games, but it's a transition. You're going from the Big 12 to the best conference in the nation. It's going to be a culture shock for them guys. They haven't seen the size and speed that they're about to see now as they did in the Big 12. So it's not out of the question for them to have a little bit of success because, you know, A&M's pretty athletic ball club, but the physicality of what they'll face in the SEC will definitely do them in this first year. Now, for year two, year three on up, I'm not sure about that, but it's going to be rough sledding this year, this first year for Mizzou and Texas A&M.
I mean, like, the first SEC game for Texas A&M, they got Florida in College Station, home of the 12th man. Do you think that's a winnable game?
No. Come on.
This is Texas now. All right, man. Yeah, he was like, no. Do you think it's going to be a close game?
No.
All right, man. Cali Mike, man, I ain't heard from you. What you got on this?
I like the Missouri. I like the Tigers this year. Jonathan Franklin. He's a very dynamic player. They got a quarterback. You know, they're bringing back T.J. Moe. He had a very solid season. And also, they bring back number one recruit in Darrell Beckham Green. And that guy's a beast, man. He's 6'6", 230. You know, they say he's running a 4.4. I mean, their offense is definitely going to be there because the defense, you know, is what's going to show up. Is going to determine how they do in the SEC because that's SEC ball is defense. You know, I'm looking at the schedule here. First game, that's going to be a wrap, Southeastern Louisiana. Then they're going to run into a little bit of trouble with Georgia, Arizona State, South Carolina, UCF, Vanderbilt, that'll go their way. Then they got Alabama, which I think is a loss. Florida, I think they're going to lose. And I think Tennessee's going to surprise a lot of people this year, so I'll give them a loss. So I don't think they're going to do that well. But, you know, like I said, if they continue the trend they're doing, solid recruiting, they could very easily make a place in the SEC. Plus, a lot of recruits are going to want to go there now simply because they're in the SEC now.
Okay. Town, Shot Town. What you got? What you think?
Well, I like Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M. I think they had. I mean, I agree with Texas saying. I think they're gonna definitely be a transition for Texas A&M and Mizzou. But I like the coach Texas A&M just hired. He reminds me of Mike Tomlin, Kevin Sutherland, what he did at Houston. I mean, remember Houston went undefeated when he was there, the head coach, and then they didn't even give the man. I mean, he won. I guess they didn't give the man a contract. You know where he wanted. So Houston, I think programs gonna kind of slide with Mike Kevin Sutherland being there. But now he's the head coach of Texas A&M. I think he's gonna get some recruits in Texas, and now them boys now get a chance to play in the SEC. Oh yeah, you know how it is in Texas. I think A&M, like, I mean, they might could sneak and surprise something. It wouldn't surprise me because this guy, I think they're gonna get recruits there to come to Texas A&M even more. Getting this guy Kevin Sutherland being the head coach, like I said, he reminds me of Mike Tomlin.
Okay, interesting. There's somebody that wants to chime in here. 813, you chime in?
Yes. I disagree. While I do agree that Texas A&M has a very good team, I also agree that they're not going to do great in the SEC this year. But you have to understand, Texas A&M does play good teams. They do every year. They play the Texases. They know how to play against top-caliber teams, and I would not be surprised with what they're coming in with, and they know they're entering the SEC. They're going to come in with that chip on their shoulder knowing, hey, we got to step up if we're going to do this for real and people going to take us serious. And I think they can come in and give some of those teams – one of their major losses. It only takes one loss to lose it all in college football now. Until the playoff system kicks in, it only takes one and you're out of BCS. And I really think Texas A&M has the opportunity right now to take down an Alabama, an LSU, a Georgia, someone that is looking forward to trying to be in that championship game. I see them being able to do it.
All right. This is Jamal. I completely agree with you about that, about A&M taking down some of the good teams. But then again, we're talking about Big 12, and then we're talking about SEC, to where in the Southeast Conference is more like a gauntlet. It's like it comes in waves of 3 and 4 weeks, you know, really challenge your mental toughness, really challenge how physically tough you are. A&M with South Carolina, Arkansas, at Mississippi, they get LSU, then they got to go to Auburn, Mississippi, Alabama. You see what I mean? That's a gauntlet. I mean, we're not talking about just a game, just a random game on the schedule where they can prepare and get ready for and come back the next week and be okay. We talking about a physical conference. We talking about a conference that where just about all of the teams are very well coached. We talking about a mental exercise combined with not having the athletes, in which they won't be able to run that, you know, run the table like that and get wins against teams, because they'll be beat up. It'll be nothing like they've ever seen before. Now, going forward, could they have some success like that? Yes. After they get used to that, they start recruiting and they get the athletes, they get the guys that they need to do to run that. But in this conference, it's not just one game. I mean, it's a row of games where you have to be ready physically, you have to be ready mentally.
But they're not the only ones having to run that gauntlet. Every team in the SEC is having to run that gauntlet. If you look at LSU, they got to go to Florida, then they play South Carolina, then they got to go to Texas A&M, and then they play Alabama. They're running the same gauntlet. And then you look at Alabama, Alabama's doing the exact same thing. They have the same gauntlet that they have to run. So it's a situation of where Alabama has LSU, then they play Texas A&M. If they get themselves up for LSU, beat LSU, they may have that letdown that very next week when they play Texas A&M, and Texas A&M beats them. We see it every year where somebody gets themselves way up for a game and the next game they lose it because they let down.
Okay, well, you, these teams, I get where you're coming from, but these teams in the Southeast Conference, they do this every single year. This little thing we're talking about where they go 3-4 weeks in a row with tough games every single year, year in, year out. They recruit the athletes year in, year out to do this. They are trained for this. They are prepared for this. You know what I'm saying? You take a LSU or Alabama, you put him in the Big 12, and they go against Missouri, then they go K-State, and then they go whoever else they have. You know, it's not going to be as challenging as Texas A&M coming from that, rising in level of competition, going into the SEC and being used to that. LSU, Alabama, Arkansas, South Carolina, this is child's play for them. This is what they do. You understand what I'm saying? This is what they do.
All right, Tony, I'm going to put you on hold here. I got another call coming in, and then we're going to
– I was going to say this one point about Texas A&M. The good thing, though, Mike Sumlin's from Texas. I mean, had coached at Houston, so you know he knows that area, so he's able to get recruits out of Texas.
All right, hopefully. All right, hold up. 407, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, what's going on? What you got to chime in for?
Well, I didn't chime in, but I mean, I don't know. Texas A&M, man, I don't see them really doing too much of nothing, man. They ain't got no defense, period. And they got a new quarterback that ain't doing nothing. That's just all my opinion on that. I mean, it's just garbage. I don't know, man. I mean, they almost beat Oklahoma State. They almost beat Arkansas. They beat Baylor. You know what I mean? But they got a lot of work to do, man. Ever since they lost their defensive coordinator for Air Force, Texas A&M ain't been the same on defense, man. So they get their defense right, then they can compete with the SEC. SEC is all about defense, man. When they get their defense right,
I agree with the caller. To me, Texas A&M has always been an almost kind of team. You know, when they were in the Big 12, they almost, you know, they were almost right at the top. They never really quite made it there. And I think moving to a harder conference, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of mind-boggling move to me. You know, I don't, like I said, besides, you know, the revenue, I don't see any chance of them, you know, really doing anything.
Really interesting.
Just added Texas to an SEC. It should have been regular Texas going to the SEC instead of A&M, but hey, y'all know if Texas would have left, they go to the Big 12.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, 407. I want you to hold on. We're going to get into this next topic here, okay? What I want to talk about now is this conversation that me, Mike from Cali, and Texas has been kind of arguing back and forth with dominant programs in college football. I guess I'll coin the question. See, Mike, Big Tex and Mike believe, from Cali Mike, believe that there's only two dominant programs remaining in college football. And I completely disagree with that. So I guess my question is, do you think there is such thing as a dominant program in college football these days? I'm going to start with you, Tex. What you think?
I think it's a rarity. I think there can be a dominant dominant football program these days. It's just the perfect storm. Recruiting, the players, just a lot of things have to break your way for a number of years. A little bit of luck, health. I mean, everything has to go right for you to, you know, to become a dominant program. But it's definitely a rarity. Not out of the question even now, but it's something that's rare, something that's special. How are we defining dominance?
Consistently winning, or if you take a few time off on probation, you can eventually come back and bounce back from it.
Does this also include sending players to the next level, successful players to the next
Absolutely.
Level?
Absolutely. No, we're dealing with college, only college.
Well, see, I mean, but then, like I said before, you got to consider that because that's part of football. That's why they play the game. You know, I think, like I said, I think you have to take all those in the facets when you talk about a truly dominant program. You know, like we were talking about Boise State. Boise State is the most winning program of the first 2000 decade. I wouldn't consider them a dominant program, but they by far won more games than any other program in that time frame.
Yeah, but, I mean, they never won a national championship, though. So, I mean, that's,
lots of schools,
when I think
man,
of a dominant program, unless you have to factor in national championships, like Notre Dame. Is Notre Dame a dominant program?
Notre Dame is a dominant program. Notre Dame is a brand name program. Notre Dame, they're still going to pull in top recruits. They're still going to play the hardest schedule. They're going to be on TV. I mean, it's like I say, you know, it's different facets of being dominant. You know, Notre Dame just by you know their prestige, and you know what their you know what their standing is in the football community. Even though you know, like I say, they're not haven't been a winning national championship program. They have won a national championship since 1990, I believe, but. You know, they keep their name out there. Everybody knows Fighting Irish. Everybody knows Golden Dome. You know, it's a tradition of college football.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, okay, they've won national championships. They won – they're the second highest rated national championships. They won – they're number two on the national championship list. Like, I mean, you have to factor in championships. Like, when I think of the dominant program, I would think of the program that has won more championships. Not necessarily a program.
Well, I mean,
branded.
National championships to me in college football to me are very subjective. I mean, especially in the past, you know, when you had a lot of different teams, you know, you had a lot of different. I mean, there, you know, you could have. There were so many different national championships back in the day, and you very rarely find a number one, number two matchup. You know, in the bowl season, you know, in the 70s and 60s and 50s and all that. You know, a lot of those. You know, like I said, a lot of those teams. You know, it's whoever the sports writers was on. You know, so I really, like I said, I consider them, but I don't think that should be a deciding factor.
Okay. All right, Tech.
You had a lot of programs that never had a chance to play for national championships, but they had very good seasons.
Tech,
That's why we need to have playoffs.
Okay, but the reason I'm coining this question is because, you know, my understanding is Cali Mike and Tex think that USC and Miami Hurricanes are, you know, the two dominant programs. Not necessarily the only two, but, like, they're dominant.
And
Alabama is not in the same league as those two. And I'm just trying to understand why would you think that. I want you to explain to the
audience. Well, I'll tell you this. Okay, Alabama was on probation, what, 19? I think they came off right on probation at the beginning of the century, right? Around the 2000s, I think they were on probation. Like, what was it?
They were on probation,
that was like 1999, right? And what did they do those first 5 years of the 2000s? What did they do till? I'm sorry, what's their coach's name?
Nick Saban.
What did they do till Nick Saban got there? Nothing.
Yeah, they weren't doing nothing. I mean, they were on a hiatus. Yeah.
No, they weren't doing. They weren't putting out players. They weren't doing anything. Period.
I mean, they were putting out one or two players. They weren't putting out the type of players that they were putting out now.
You name one.
Back then, DeMarco Ryan.
Ooh.
He's playing for the Eagles now. DeMarco Ryan. He was a Pro Bowl. He was a defensive rookie of the year.
Clausell. We're not saying that Miami is a dominant program right now. I think USC could be headed that way. We're just talking about what we're saying is, first off, dominant programs do exist in the NCAA, but, again, it's the perfect storm. You understand what I'm saying? And when you look at the Hurricane, when you factor in everything, you take a look at the Hurricane. I mean, that's why I asked you, what are we calling dominant? What are our standards? Because if we're looking at the Hurricanes from 2000 to 2004, then we can call that a dominant program. You see what I'm saying?
Well, during those 2 years.
The same thing for USC from 2002 to 2005. And you can go back. You can look at those rosters and just see and you can see what I'm talking about. You know,
right.
Not to mention when they get into the games, they're blowing everybody out. I mean, it's almost not even fair. What, Miami
right.
from 2000 to 2002, what they won like what, 35 consecutive wins from 2000 to 2002.
Yeah, I think they won 35, and I think
FC
won
33. And I want to say something.
And I'm not going back this far, but even back in the mid '80s, they won 20 straight road games. It's a level of dominance. They were winning national championships. They were pumping out guys to the NFL. Same thing from 2000 to 2004. Yeah. Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, we sit there.
Is Clavel there? Okay, well,
Clavel.
Tex was saying, you got USC and Miami, they like I said, they're very dominant programs when the perfect storm is going on. You got, like I said, perfect storm includes coaching, players, behavior, players going to the pros, players staying. It's a lot of things that contribute to a team, especially college football when you only have a window of 4 years to really deal with your player, really 3 years of a top player who might leave, to try to get the maximum potential out of them.
Yeah, I see what y'all saying. I mean, those are two schools, we've seen over the past, we say it's 2012, prior to the past, maybe 10, 15 years where we've seen two schools that was pretty dominant like that. I would say probably a team we kind of left out, but we kind of know also we've seen when we was at FAMU in Tallahassee. I mean, Florida State was a pretty good dominant program for a while too, though, in the 90s and then part of 2000.
Yeah, Florida State was.
I'm back, y'all.
Okay.
Yeah, Florida State was definitely – okay. It also might be towards the high level that the SEC is playing at, but let's look at the team. Look at Miami's games in the SEC. They're not like Miami or USC games when they're dominant. Now, I would look at like Florida of 2008. That was a dominant team in the SEC. LSU 2003. That was a dominant team in the SEC. They were blowing they're smashing their opponent. It wasn't even close. I mean, Alabama, for all they've done, they lost to LSU last year. They came back and beat them in the national championship. But how many times are you gonna get the chance to do that?
Yeah, but they're sending guys to the pros though, man. I mean, they're sending them guys to the pros at the rate Miami was sending the pros to the 80s, and at the rate of USC was sending to the pros. I mean, you gotta factor that in.
There's no way on the same level, though, Clause. I mean,
you got to see how their careers fruit come into play, though. It's got to be at least on the same level as USC right now.
Okay, who from the era after Alabama went on probation have they sent to the pros? You name one player.
After they went on probation or when they were on probation?
After, even when.
I'm confused. After, because I mean, we've seen a slew of players right now. We had three first round.
No, I'm talking about directly after.
Directly
from
after.
From that.
I got a name one, DeMarco Ryan, the defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, he was. I don't think he was that highly regarded player coming out of the.
He was first
round. That was kind of a surprise for him to win. That was kind of a surprise for him to come out and do that. And he hasn't really. Equaled that kind of success since then, has he?
And he wasn't. I mean, none against. He wasn't a first round pick either. I think he was like a second round pick.
I don't remember him being that heralded of a recruit. You got to look at like I said. I think y'all top player. From when before you guys went on probation. Was Antonio Langham, I believe, right?
No, man, that was way back, yo. That was way, way back.
Hey,
hold up, man. I got a caller coming in here.
I was gonna say you talked about one player who went top though, Chris Samuels. He was a lottery pick.
Yes, he was. He came out the same. He was number three in the draft, right after LeVar Arrington. That is true. But hold up, I want to get this caller in. All right, I got two callers in. First caller is 813.
I disagree with the way that we are structuring dominant programs. Why? Because you're going to get fluctuations up and down of which conference is winning what and when they're winning, and no team is going to be the champion every single year.
Yeah, sorry about that. I got
but
disconnected.
It's a situation where, to me, the dominant programs are the ones with the money, the ones that can go out and recruit those top athletes every single year, every single time, and be in the top 10 every single year at the end of the year. Those are dominant programs. Why? Because they're getting the best players from around the country every year, consistently, every time. That is dominating the rest of the college football world. That is a dominant team.
So what team right now is a dominant team right now?
There are several dominant teams right now. Oklahoma is a dominant team. Alabama, LSU, USC, Penn State, Ohio, those are all dominant teams because it doesn't matter how many thousands of players want to go into an NCAA Division I team, they tend to choose these programs. That makes them the dominant programs.
It's one team that you forgot. I think, fellas, we all forgot, too, and they the winningest team in college football, Michigan. They
yeah,
got the money.
That's
the
a dominant
house.
Program.
I mean, they heading back to the right track.
Those schools are some of the top schools. But like I said, when we talk about the very top, you know, me and Tex, we talk about Miami and USC. USC can go and recruit in Florida and pull the best players out of Florida, as happened before. Miami can go and recruit in California and pull the best players out of California. You know, Texas.
Alabama's coming to Florida and pulling the best players out of Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's due more towards their location to Florida. Are they pulling the best players out of Ohio? Are they pulling the best players out of California? Are they pulling the best players out of New York?
Right now,
the
because they're winning national championships,
no,
they're pulling their players from all over the country.
No, they're not. If you look at their recruiting, they're staying in the South.
Mark Ingram, where's Mark Ingram from? Mark Ingram was the best player out of Michigan. They pulled him.
Mark Ingram is from Michigan.
I see where you're coming
from.
Huh? Mark Ingram. I'm sorry, what you saying, Mike? I'm sorry, Kelly. What you saying?
You said Mark Ingram is from Michigan?
Yeah, he's from Michigan. He's not from Alabama.
Oh, I didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, like
when
I said,
when you are the top
teams,
when you're winning national championships, people that want to go to the NFL want to be on your team. It doesn't matter where they live. If I live in the middle of Kansas,
but I'm saying I'm going to go to Tennessee
if they're winning the national championship.
But I'm saying, I'm looking at when they weren't winning national championships. And yeah, you're right. Everybody wants to go to the top. You know, everybody flocks to Auburn, you know. But I'm talking about when they weren't winning the national championship. Nobody was wanting to go to Alabama.
Top teams
when they were
go back and forth winning the national championship. Every team
right.
we've named that as a top team has won the national championship on several occasions over the last 50 years.
I kind of get what you're saying.
I get what you're saying, but that's a long time. And plus, you know, like I say, they're not – the recruiting, I'm telling you, if you really look at it, it's not the same. It's not – I mean, like I say, players were coming to Alabama when they came off of probation because of Nick Saban. They weren't coming there to play for Alabama. They were coming there to play for Nick Saban. Can we agree on that?
I agree on that.
Claudel?
I think Bama's right. back because of Nick Saban.
I'll give you that, but you got to realize Alabama had
a history of being a championship team. Under Bear Bryant, Alabama won 3 or 4 national championships. They are not some team
Bryant.
That just came out of nowhere.
Come on,
Bear Bryant. After Bear Bryant left Alabama, what happened to Alabama in the 80s?
But what I'm saying to you is
they
have the tradition
team,
of being a top tier team. They didn't just come on the scene because they won it in the last two or three years.
I'm not saying that by any means. But I'm saying, like I said, they have fallen off.
But USC is falling off too. That's what I'm saying. USC's had their falling off. Miami has had their falling off.
That's what I'm saying. Name win for either of them.
What'd you say?
Win.
Tennessee was falling off.
The guy that is at USC
right now, they had the top three recruits in the country, and they hadn't won anything. They hadn't even won an SEC championship.
Hey, Tony, man, I gotta get this other caller, man. So
go ahead. I'm
gonna have to put you on hold, okay, man? All right.
Yeah,
I get the boys.
Go ahead.
407.
Hello.
Yeah.
Now, I hear all this talk about dominance, but from what I've seen, to me, domination goes to the coach. I know y'all might think I'm talking crazy, but like Nick Saban, I'm going to give you a prime example. What he did is pure breed, genius. He went to the Miami Dolphins as a head coach. He established his whole recruiting right down there when he was there. His dad used to coach at the University of Miami. He's always had a base in the South Florida. When he was at LSU, he dominated. When he was at Alabama, he dominated. Everywhere this man going, he dominated. So I think it has to do a lot with the coach. Urban Meyer, where he goes, he dominates. University of Miami, they're probably one of the only few teams that's won since the 80s that's won a championship in every decade. But I don't know about domination. When you say domination, I see players going to the league. Brandon Shannon was a terrible coach, but he still had all these recruits go to the league. So I don't know what you say about domination, but University of Miami, to me, is the most dominant program ever. I'm sorry.
I don't think Randy Shannon was that terrible a coach, though, in my opinion.
Well, to me, he was
a terrible coach.
Let me tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. When you got Sam Shields, and I'm going to tell you, I have to say Sam Shields. I follow University of Miami very heavy. I'm the most diehard Hurricane fan ever. I used to go to Florida State and talk shit. I'm the most dominant. I'm like, that's my team. I'm just telling you right now, Sam Shields, this guy, he played on both sides of the ball. They couldn't find nothing for him. They put him on special teams. He's faster than Devin Hester. This man, they couldn't do nothing with him. He goes to the Green Bay Packers. Now he looks like a damn all-star. I'm just saying, if you know how to develop players, it's all about your coaching. Nick Saban knows how to develop players. Now Alabama's probably going to be one of the most dominant programs as long as Nick Saban stays there. It has to do with NFL-style coaches in NCAA. That's why USC became so dominant with Pete Carroll and all these other coaches that look so good coming from the NFL. That's what it looks like now.
And how long they've been in there? And they just now had a nice year where they pumped out some players into the NFL, first, second round, some guys who don't play.
As compared from
2000 to 2004 with Miami, remember when they sent six guys in the first round? I mean, they had a losing record 2 years ago and had eight players drafted, more than Alabama. Didn't Alabama win a national title?
Yeah, how many players in the first round, though? And you're right. From 79 to 92, Alabama was non-existent. You know what I mean? From
exactly.
92 to 2009, Alabama was non-existent. The only player they had that did anything, and he's not even in the league no more, is Sean Alexander. But besides Chris Samuels
did something too, though.
Well, yeah, but Mike, the fact that we're even able to point out certain players proves the point in itself. You can't look at just certain players from Miami or SC that came out because it's hell of them.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is Alabama is pushing they're on the track to push out like Miami did in the 80s.
Well, like we're saying,
I think they're already on the level. Well, I mean, you can say that. I mean, you can say USC is there because of Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll
yeah,
and
you're right.
Lane Kiffin is.
Right. Lane Kiffin is doing what Pete Carroll did. And
he's on the start of doing that.
Nah, he's doing it. That man
is right now. Yeah.
What this guy is doing right now is next to a miracle. It's crazy.
75 scholarships.
And their probation days is not over. They just doing an appeal process. A lot of people think their probation is over. No.
Alabama went on probation and basically died, man. I mean, like I said, their best player coming out of probation was Tyrone Prothro, right? And he didn't even make it to the league.
Oh, come on, man. That's a shot right there. That's a big shot right there.
But no, he was a good player, but he didn't even make it to the league, though, right? I mean,
that's a shot, yo. I know that's a shot right there. That's a big shot right there.
Hey, caller. I'll say this, though. I don't think Shannon was bad as Coach Coker. I don't think Coach Coker was a good coach. You can blame all that on him because he brought in all them recruits, you know, for Shannon to coach. Shannon really didn't – I mean, finally got something, but then I decided to fire him.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good conversation. We need to take a little break here. I'm going to take about a five-minute break here, yo. We're going to get to our professional – football discussion. CMT Firestorm, give us a call. 347-237-5539. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Hey, Tex.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, man? I mean,
it's your favorite song. Turn your radio on. Play it for your man or your lady all night long. It's amazing, baby, how we let it go. On and on, for this long. You blaming me, I'm blaming you. I can't say you're right, but I sure ain't wrong. Girl, lately I've been thinking, and my thoughts are telling me tripping. Used to say I didn't care. Found your bags back upstairs. With all that talking tough, I'm about to lose you.
If this is my last chance, I'm out to love you.
I'm gonna play it like a grown man or two.
If I only got one shot,
I'm gonna do it no matter what your girlfriend says.
I'm gonna do it.
We're leaning, baby.
are back. Now we're going to get into our NFL discussion. A lot of stuff's been going on in the NFL this week. Roger Goodell, Jonathan Vilma. We want to know, what's your outlook on that situation? What's your opinion on the commissioner in general? Do you think he has too much power? Is he throwing his weight around too much? Does Jonathan Vilma have a point? I want to start with Mike. Cali Mike, what's going on? Tell me what you think.
I think that Goodell, he's pretty much turning this into the no-fun league. Ever since he became commissioner, he's not a football guy. That's not his background, first of all. So I think he's trying to come in and show his toughness by exerting his power. And usually, most of the time, in those types of situations, they end up having an exact reverse effect. You know, he's made a fire now on a lot of, you know, things that people consider outlandish. But, you know, like I said, the celebrations that they do, they're not, you know, too excessive to me. Some, you know, I mean, it's a game. You know, it's entertainment purposes. And, you know, like I say, with this, you know, with this thing with the, you know, with the Saints and this whole, you know, if he did, you know, judge them without even really looking at it, he saw it. Like I said, I think that this case could potentially, you know, lose him his job. And, I mean, I think it's going to change the way that we look at commissioners in every other sport as well as football, too. Because, I mean, like I say, how much power should a commissioner really have over these teams? You know, the teams themselves are independent besides the fact they belong to this association. But, I mean, how much power can we really place in the commissioner's hands, you know, to be judge, jury, and executioner over, you know, somebody's career and somebody's ability to make money?
Tex, what you think?
Yeah, I think he's a little abusive of his power. That being said, arrests in the NFL are, players overall since he's been a commissioner, players haven't gotten in trouble as much as they used to. Although you had a rash of incidents this year. That being said, I mean there are two sides to everything. The Saints were told about this before. And I think where they got in trouble is where they lied. And but still, I do think that Dale, he's a bit abusive. He claims he has evidence. You know, he won't pull it out for anybody to see. He won't show it. And another thing is the players had to know better. When these guys negotiated the CBA, they made Roger Goodell judge, jury, and executioner. So these guys have to kind of take some responsibility and realize that when they get into these situations, who they're going to face, they have to understand that they kind of set that up themselves. And if you let a guy, I mean, you get disciplined by Roger Goodell, you appeal your discipline. Who are you appealing to? Roger Goodell. That's a problem. That's a player problem.
Shottown, what you think, man, before we get into our caller?
Well, I mean, like I was speaking of last week when I had my 2 minutes, I just don't like the direction or what part of he's doing of making the NFL being a global sport, which is not, and talking about having the NFL being the Olympics. But, you know, I said that last week. I still think, really, I just seen an article, you know, NFL Players Association, you know what I'm saying, found out they didn't get all the evidence right, was misled of not knowing what was going on. I guess know more about the Saints bounty case. So right now they're kind of going and appealing that. So at the time we thought it was, you know, cool breeze with the two. I still think it's some friction between NFL Players Association and, you know, the NFL with Roger Goodell. But I agree with the boys on that. I just think he has too much power. They need to set up a whole system. But then Tex made a good point. The players agreed on everything, but that was a problem. They should have let that known before they had signed and agreed to the terms of it, you know, only having that much power. Because I think the thing is kind of set up wrong. It's just like you said, too much power for the guy. They need to have a system where they have a disciplinary guy and all that, have an appeal, have that to it. Maybe the Players Association could say something about it, you know, or maybe the players that brought it to the Players Association about it. But I don't know. I just think, man, I'm kind of skeptical on the way the NFL was headed to.
All right. Well, let's call in 347-237-5539, CMT Firestorm. I want to get to our first call here on 407. 407, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's going on? What's your opinion on Goodell?
Yeah, I kind of feel he doesn't have too much power, but, I mean, do you think David Stern has too much power? I don't know. I mean, he's the commissioner, man. I mean, don't get mad that he's trying to lay down the law. I mean, I don't have a problem with anything he's doing, to be honest. He's trying to clean up the dirty in his mouth. Yeah,
but David
Stern, but
David Stern has Stu Jackson for the disciplinary stuff who finds the players and they go in and appeal it, where NFL doesn't have that.
Yeah, you're right. They probably need to put another system in place. But right now, I mean, that's how it is, and they ain't stepped up to make no changes, so how can you get mad about it?
Like Tech said, though, the players – it was on them. They agreed when they, you know, signed the, you know, the deal for being certified. They should have brought that to the table before they signed about, you know, the structure of that. Since a lot of players, you know, even Drew Brees, they're not too, you know, too fond of Goodell. They think he's a liar. He's kind of two-faced and not, you know, sincere about stuff. The way they sounded like to him, where they can't trust the guy.
I mean, if you want a dictatorship in NFL, that's what you got. And that's all it is. What dictator can you trust?
I mean, well, hold on. I want to get into the caller here. Put you on hold. Hello? 407, okay? I'm going to the next caller here.
Get a lot of static from somebody's phone.
I got a next caller, 813.
Hey, I totally disagree with the premise of everything everyone's saying. Why? You are acting like the football players are the ones with the power. The football players are the nobodies in this whole situation, gentlemen. You have to realize the owners own the team. They have the money and they have the power. The commissioner is over the whole league, and the Congress is over the whole NFL and MLB. So you have to understand, on the totem pole of sports, the players are at the bottom. And because they're at the bottom, they don't have a say. They either do what they want or do what they're told because they are getting paid millions of dollars to do what they're told, or they go and sit and watch it on television.
People don't go see the owners, though. They go to see the players. They go see best players in the world. And nobody is saying
if the owners don't pay you.
All right. But nobody is saying that, you know, Goodell has overstepped his boundaries. Yes, he has. I mean, when it comes to the, dare I say, the Kraft Mafia and the Rooney Mafia, you know, punishment is not so stiff. You understand what I'm saying? But you got the little Benson mob.
You can't tell Goodell he's overstepped his boundaries. Who told him who his boundaries is? If Congress didn't say his boundaries was overstepped, you, the Players Association, or the owners ain't got no way to say it. You have to realize there is a structure to it, and the bigger structure than Goodell is the United States Congress, and if they say he ain't got no boundaries, then you ain't got no right, the players ain't got no right, and the owners ain't got no right.
The United States Congress is part of the checks and balance system, aren't they? Don't they? The United States Congress is part of the checks and balance system, the United States government.
No, that's,
so they
that's
have
among
all,
themselves,
the
but
right.
They have already said that for the NFL and the MLB, you have a commissioner, and he is the king. What he says goes. And as long as that's the way it is, you don't have to like what he does. He has that power.
Major League Baseball does have a disciplinarian, though, like Joe Torre. He's in charge of that. So NFL,
so
like you said, just has
basketball.
Yeah. And
only one sport that has a man that's in charge of discipline and who's the person you appeal to, and that's football.
Well, I mean, for me, the way I'm looking at it is all of the players are acting like spoiled little kids. You better be glad that somebody's willing to give you millions of dollars to be out there on that field, because they can put you back in your house eating food out of a can.
If they want to play.
What makes you think they're going to eat food out of a can if they don't, whatever, whatever. That's another.
Because you ain't going to have no money. I mean,
who's gonna
be a millionaire one day and broke the next. We see it every day.
Who's going to play the game, though? Play the game?
Huh?
Who's going to play the game?
There are other people that will play the game. People that will,
They tried that before. That was XFL. That was World
Football. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying to you,
just like the
referees that are in the NFL right now, there are other people willing to do your job if you're not willing to do it.
Everybody's going
to
stop those referees right now. They already said that this is the worst referee.
It doesn't matter. Are they not there?
And they're not the players. People don't come to see the refs. People come to see the players.
You can be a ref right now complaining and arguing and wanting more. But guess what you're going
to
be doing this year? You're going to be sitting at home watching football and not getting paid because you don't want
to
listen. You want
to
have everything your way.
Yeah, and your product.
I get what he's saying. He's saying that the next player doesn't cut it, like, you know what I'm saying, you know, NFL, another player is there to take your job. That's what he's saying.
No, that's the point, though. There isn't. The reason that there's NFL, NBA, and MLB is because these are the best players in the world. Like I say, the reason that the XFL did not work was because those weren't the best players. The reason that the world
USFL is why the USFL didn't work.
They did not.
They had
have
bad
the
organization.
Hold on. I need your time in here. Let me get everybody's attention. I need time in. Make a comment. We're gonna go to the next topic here. We're running low. Who need to make comment? Was it Cali Mike?
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Did you need to make a comment? I'm gonna make two more comments on this topic, and then we're gonna go.
Look, all I'm gonna say is people come to see these players play. We've seen leagues come and go that could provide the best players, and people did not. The people don't want to see that. They don't want to seek replacement players. When that happened when the league first went on strike, that was a fiasco in the 80s. Nobody wants to see that. You know, the NBA has proven, well, it didn't completely prove it. But when those players started barnstorming and the owners started seeing people filling up those arenas to come to see the players without them owners, that's when owners start changing their tune. When
again,
players start to realize
you,
that the game
you,
is
you
in their hands,
at the lower
that's
part
the
of the totem pole. You're still at the lower part of the totem pole. The real power starts above the owners, not below them. And people will come to see the players that are put on the field. Why? Because the owners are going to advertise and they're going to hype them up, and people are going to come see them. You don't know who the greatest players are unless you are told who the greater players are.
Ask the Cleveland Cavaliers how that turned out without LeBron James.
Ask you what they said.
All right. Okay, let me stop here. I'm gonna put you on hold, Tony. We gotta go to the next topic here. I want to talk about Maurice Jones-Drew.
Quazay, I didn't mean to cut you off. Since you were, you know, a football fan, this and that. What's your take on Roger Goodell?
I think he has too much power. I'm in agreement. I don't really like him that much. I think. He is a little bit overbearing. I mean, I understand with the Pac-Man Jones. He kind of rubbed me wrong with the Pac-Man Jones situation. I mean, I don't think he should have been suspended for a year. I mean, I think he should have been sort of disciplined to a degree, but I don't think he should have been suspended for a whole year. With the Saints bounty situation, I don't think somebody – well, I don't know. I kind of a little bit agree with Sean Payton, maybe, but I don't agree with Jonathan Vilma's situation. So, I mean, I really think he has too much power, and I think there should be some sort of checks and balances system put in place. But like Tech said, I mean, I don't understand why during the collective bargaining agreement the players agreed to this, the conditions where he was completely in charge. But that's my opinion on that. But we need to get to
that. Football and basketball is different. Basketball players don't have guaranteed contracts, so their football players are going broke. That's the reason why they did that.
True.
Yeah, and that's, I don't even like that.
And
right
baseball. And baseball contracts are guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, baseball players go on contract for a whole season. They've done it before.
Stuff right there with that. But I want to get into this Maurice Jones-Drew situation. It's reported that He's willing to seek trade offers. He's holding out, and the owner is not budging. He's not going to give him another contract. And I kind of want to know what your outtake on that is. I'm going to start with you, Tex. What's your opinion on Maurice Jones-Drew? Is he doing the right thing, or should he just report to camp?
I think he's treating this situation like a business decision. The guy accounted for almost 50% of the Jags' offense. He always accounts for most of their offense anyway. He's one of the top running backs in the league. He's basically all they've had since he's been there for the most part. I think he's just doing what he feels like he needs to do from a business standpoint. Now, does that mean he has leverage? No. He's under contract. If he's sitting out, he's not getting paid. I do think from a business standpoint, though, that he's doing the right thing. He has to stand up. The guy is severely underpaid. You see all these other running backs getting money, D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, LaShawn McCoy, who is a great running back, by the way, but doesn't have Maurice Jones-Drew's resume. All these other guys are getting paid. So what's Jacksonville waiting on? Especially when you have the running back accounting for 50% of your offense. But I think it's more of a kind of an ethical thing that owners tend to ignore most of the time. But it's, you know, like I said, I mean, Jones-Drew has no leverage. He's under contract. You know, either he gets paid or he sits out or he's open to being traded, which is what's going on now. Jacksonville said they're fielding calls, but not really saying whether or not they're trading.
All right. Shy, did I hear from you? Shytown?
Nah. Jax is 100% right. I mean, I agree with his stance, like, hey, especially the sport of football, and he's a running back, and the shelf life of a running back, it's all about the money. And we all know football contract is not guaranteed. So let's say he, you know, reports to camp, come to camp, mess around, he tears ACL up, and he out for the whole year, and, hey, he ain't going to get that new contract. And this man just came off, you know, winning, you know, a rushing title. So, I mean, he feel like you were saying, like Tess was saying, you know, he's undervalued, underpaid. So, yeah, he won a new contract. So, if I was him, I mean, hey, you got to make your stand. I wouldn't report until I get a new contract. Either give me the new contract or trade me. And I, at the same time, too, like you said, like Tex said, it's a business decision, yeah. He got to look out for him and his family. He got to do his best for him and his family, too. And, hey, you know, that contract, a new contract, help him and his family. I mean, you know, out there to survive and live, you know, comfortably well. So, hey, he got to do what he got to do. And I think Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, the owner, Jacksonville, you know, we've seen how it is out there. I mean, they don't have much. The market's been not too good. It's been talking, you know, they might be the team that might be moving to L.A. because, I mean, they're not selling, you know, tickets out there. Fans are not, you know, selling up the stadium. And I heard the Super Bowl they had out there, it's probably not going to be one for a while. So right now this is a team that is desperate to do what they got to do of having fans coming. He pretty much is they brand, the face of their franchise, and this new owner comes in who just bought the team to say that, well, the train has left. Hey, he already kind of rubbed the guy the wrong way. So that's what I think with the trade thing is, you know, come up of saying, man, this man, you know, definitely don't show appreciation to me saying that. I mean, he knew the whole situation knowing, you know, hey, things is not too good right there. You know, I think something, you know, right now, who knows, but I'm 100% with Maurice Jones-Drew is doing.
Well, my thing is, I think he's wrong for doing this. I understand he's coming at it from a business perspective, but when he signed that contract, he knew this situation was going to occur. Unlike the Darrelle Revis situation, he signed his contract up front. He got all that upfront money, and then him and the Jets organization agreed that 2 years down the road, we're going to discuss this again. And the Jets are not coming through with their end, but he's coming through with his end. But with Maurice Jones-Drew, from my understanding, he knew that, you know, he was going to get a lump sum of money at the beginning. You know, he fulfilled his contract obligation. He feel like he can bring some more money. Now he knows the low end pay is going to come part of the low end part of his contract is going to come. You know, he knew coming in that this was going to happen. He agreed with the organization that this is how they're going to do this. And, you know, for him to change face, that just doesn't look good. When so he's kind of like saying that he went against the agreement. Even though I understand that organizations can go against their players or ask the players to renegotiate their deals, but still there was an agreement between him and the organization, and the organization never showed him that they were going to go against him. So I think he's at the wrong in this situation, Maurice Jones-Drew.
But also all the time with the contract, though, we know how it is in the NFL. They ask players to restructure their contracts all the time, so what's the difference? Where they can restructure your contract, or you take a pay cut, or you get released. So, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, that's the con of it. So, I mean, why, you know, it's wrong for the man to ask for a new contract, knowing that, you know, football contracts are not guaranteed.
Right, but
that's a good point, Mike. That's a good point. A lot of times people fail to look at that. You know, everybody, you know, like the last caller wants to look at, you know, a lot of players like this being spoiled and this and that just because they're making millions. Everybody's making millions. That's the reason why they're in that business, is to make millions of dollars. And if you think these owners are sitting at home broke, you know, you got another big company. They're not millionaires. They're billionaires. So, you know, like I say, it's about money. And, you know, like I said, Maurice Jones-Drew, he's not really even looking for a raise. He just wants an extension on his contract, know that he's going to be able to play with his team a little bit longer. I mean, I don't see what's, you know, if you got a player that, you know, that's the heart and soul of your team, and he's willing to say, okay, I want to finish out my career with you guys, and I want the job security of having a contract extension, what's the matter with that? I mean, he's not holding out saying that he needs to be the highest paid running back in the league or something like that. I've seen guys do that, and I've kind of been, you know, on the fence about that. But, you know, the way these NFL contracts, you got to get the maximum amount of money as you can and the least amount of years. Because these owners try to get every cent back.
That's understandable. I was going to say, too,
he said he wants to be the highest paid running back. I don't think he's going to be the highest paid. I don't think he's going to get Adrian Peterson money.
All right, let me get a call in. 407.
Yeah, I say MJD, he's just doing what everybody else doing, man. I can't hate on the man because, you know, CJ did it. You know what I mean? I mean, if that's the whole offense, he needs to be paid. I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, he got what, a 5-year deal, 30.95. You know what I mean? Over 5 years, it was close to $8 million a year. Is that front-loaded contract. But at the same time, so now it's running out. He only get about $4 million. Yeah, he's sad. But you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, his career will get prolonged because he'll get a 50-50 deal with your boy Jennings. They finna split that. He probably ain't going to be the front load. They're going to split his carry. So he's going to prolong his career. But at the same time, I think, you know, I don't think what he's doing is wrong. He deserves the money. I think he's a top 3 running back. So he should get $10 to $12 million, but I think he should only sign a 1-year deal. If you sign 1-year deals, you always get your money. But that's just me. I think what he's doing is not wrong, though.
You sign that 1-year deal. Let's say you sign that 1-year deal. He don't put up the numbers he had this past year. You know how it is, the numbers, especially for a running back. Or he gets hurt and then don't play the whole 16-game season. Or let's say he blow out his knee and tear his ACL. Then he ain't gonna get no long-term contract.
Yeah, you're right, but at the same time, I mean, there's running backs that you're right. You're right about that. You got to be consistent in the league in order to keep getting paid. You're right.
And nobody wants to play on a 1-year contract, especially in the NFL.
You're right, but there's people doing it, though. I mean, you could do it. Yeah, as a running back, you're right. You want to secure that contract, but I don't know, man. I think he's going to mess up his chances in Jacksonville, so a trade probably is going to be his best bet. I mean, I don't think
that might be the best thing for him, too. He might get traded for a contender.
But the thing is,
I think the owner kind of messed it up saying where the train is left. So, yeah, he probably was mad as heck when he heard that. Okay, you feel that way about it? Like, damn, you know?
Yeah,
you got to look who the owner is, too. You got a businessman who's going to come in and try to play hardball. So, Maurice Jones-Drew got to play hardball. It's a brand new owner. He's gonna come in the league and try to approach it like how he approaches his business, and that's hardball. That's how these cats became rich in the first place.
All right, hold on. Hey, I'm gonna have to put you on hold, Steve. All right, I'm gonna put you on hold, And I got to get this other call in, all right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, 813.
Hey, I still see the other side. I always see the opposite side of the coin when everybody goes one way. And the way that I see it is the man signed a contract. In this country, when you sign a contract, that is a legal document. You have to live up to that contract. Now, he went, and he went on a sorry team and became half the team. I understand that. But no matter how good you became on that sorry team, you signed a contract to live up to that contract, and he's not trying to live up to his contract. A lot of things in that contract are special things like, okay, incentives. If you get 300 yards, you get this much money. If you get 1,000 yards, you get this much money. If they wanted to be really mean to him, they can bench him. And then he don't get nothing but certain basics. And he, when they trade him, he won't go nowhere because they don't even have anything to show he's doing anything for this year. So when you don't live up to a legal binding contract, there are things they can do against you. So it's easy to see his point to want more money, but he signed a contract for the money he's getting. He needs to live up to that contract.
Well, we saying, okay.
Don't live up to their contracts of a player.
I want to respond. I want him to respond to that, and then we're going to have to move to the next topic. Respond to him, and then we're going to have to move to the next topic.
Okay. Like I said, the owners, you know, owners break contracts all the time. Anytime these players get injured, they're not getting paid, and they're going to get kicked off their team. You know, a contract for labor isn't the same as a contract, you know, for any other kind of service, especially in the NFL. I mean, we're not talking about slavery. That's why they have free agency in the first place. These cat, you know, like I said, the owner is going to do what's in his best interest. So what's wrong with the player doing what's in his best interest? This is a business. These cats aren't out playing for fun. They're, like you said, they're out playing for millions of dollars. So why wouldn't I, in my right mind, try to get as many millions as I can?
I don't disagree for him to want to, but the odds of him getting it are nil to none.
All right.
Any players are moving that wrong.
Let him respond. Hey, Tex, I need you to respond. Anybody want to respond to that? I'm going to have to put you back on hold.
He says his chances of getting a new contract are nil to none. Besides the point, it's just the approach. I'm approaching it like it's a business. You understand what I'm saying? I have no problem. I mean, it's upward. It's a form of upward mobility, isn't it? If you've outperformed the contract, you have a right to, you know, want more money. I don't have an issue with that. And, yes, he does have a contract. He should honor it. But, you know, it seems like nobody ever gets mad when the owner is asking players to take a pay cut. Or, okay, now we have to cut you. Now you have to restructure. You understand what I'm saying? Or, okay, we need a front-loaded contract from you. You understand what I'm saying? So we'll sign you to a 5-year deal. We'll keep you for 2 years. Last three, you don't have any guaranteed money on that. We'll just get rid of you after that. Nobody's talking about the hypocrisy from the owner's side of the equation.
The funny thing about that to me, too, Tex, is that you get a lot of hardworking Americans that'll be the first one saying that, oh, this guy needs to honor his contract, this or that. But if they went and made jobs the next day and their owner told them, hey, you know, I'm thinking about cutting your pay, they'd be the first ones out in line protesting, you know, filing a grievance with their union, not going, you know what I mean? But, you know, for some reason, it seems when it comes to professional athletes, it's completely different.
Yep.
All
right. I get what he was saying, though. You know, being America, honoring the contract, and I agree with Mike was saying. Yeah, I mean, but again, it's sports, and like I said before, they ask players to, you know, restructure their contracts, or you know, you get cut or released. So what's the problem? You know, for a player asking for a new contract, you know, it's a sport. I mean, like Mike was saying too earlier. Fans come to watch the players play. They're the one that's bringing the money and making their owners richer and filling up the seats. People come to see the players play in a billion-dollar industry.
I've never been to an NFL game to watch Roger Goodell. I can say that much.
All right, then we got to move on to the next topic here. We got to get into our conference predictions here for AFC. We didn't really get. Oh, well, real quick, bro. One word. Clinton Portis, Hall of Fame.
No.
Nope.
No, no, no. I say no too.
Maybe
okay.
In college. Maybe in college.
Maybe college football Hall of Famer? Okay, maybe.
Not even right. In. Not even.
Okay. AFC North, who do you have?
Steelers.
Steelers.
I have to take the Pittsburgh Steelers too.
Yeah, I got the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens. So
Quavell still don't get it. He still don't get it about the quarterback.
Well, who won the division last year?
But the Ravens didn't go to the Super Bowl, but still, you know, had the quarterback. And some people were saying I was wild and going crazy about it, but I thought the Ravens should have pushed harder for Peyton Manning. Now, they got Peyton Manning, I would say they finally have a chance to do it and win the thing, you know? You know, every year, it's all about the Ravens, all about the Ravens, but they don't have the quarterback.
You don't think they can make it with Joe Flacco?
Nah, I don't.
They can win the division with Joe Flacco.
I'm not sold on Flacco. You got to prove it to me to do it and win it, and he hasn't done it yet. So until he does, you know, I'm going with Big Ben. Fellow Pisces, my ass, same year, 82. So, hey, Big Ben.
All right, AFC South, who you got?
Texans.
You got Texans?
I'm going to go with the Colts. Peyton Manning's not with Indy no more. So, yeah, I got to go with the Texans.
That was a shot. I know that was a shot, you.
Yeah, I got to go with the Houston Texans, too. Got a lot of power here.
I tell you what.
I got the Texans, too, but I got them barely getting in, though. I got them barely getting in. I think there's going to be like a 9-7 type of year for the Texans for some reason. Even though they look like they got the firepower, but just something with the quarterback shop, just not rubbing me the right way.
No, if the Texans are healthy, they are a 13-win team, hands down.
And right now they've been a hot team. Some people think they might go all the way and win it. Finally be their year to do
it. Just not rubbing me right about Schaub. But, okay.
I get what you're saying about Schaub, yeah, because he hasn't been too durable. But, I mean, hey, like Tex said, you know, they're healthy. They are a 13-win team. And they did make it to the playoffs still. Maybe if he hadn't got hurt, you never know. They might have went further.
All right. AFC West, who do you have?
Denver.
Denver? You have Denver winning? Oh, yeah, Denver with Peyton Manning. I didn't think about that. Sorry, bro.
I pick for the AFC West, of course, is going to be the football Oakland Raiders.
Raiders. All right. I'm kind of feeling with the two. I mean, the Chiefs is a team. I still think with Castle, they got the cast and their defense, Romeo Crennel. But then Denver got Peyton Manning. It's a toss and turn. Right now, I'm going to give a chance for the Kansas City Chiefs. But I wouldn't be surprised on the Denver Broncos.
I got the Denver Broncos, 9-7 getting in. I do think Oakland – see, I just don't like how they fired that coach at Oakland. I thought he was changing the culture there a little bit. Even though they barely missed the playoffs, I thought the coach they had last year, he was kind of changing things up a little bit. But
Hugh Jackson.
Some reason they fired him. I don't know why.
They fired him, I guess, because he had too much control. You know, he had a contract with Al Davis. And, of course, you know, rest in peace, Al Davis, one of
the
great
football.
And then he didn't want to give up, you know, control. So, I guess the new guy came in, you know, who they wanted because – you know, Al Davis' son doesn't know anything about football. They want to bring in people who know about football because Al Davis was everything. He was a GM, owner, president. He did everything. So, I mean, it ain't going to be like that now. So it came down to it. I feel you on that, Clausel. I thought Hugh Jackson did a good job in his first year there. They were headed in the right direction, but it's just he had control and stuff. And he pretty much had control after Al Davis passed away because he had that contract. So that's what it came down to. And he also made some comments. He kind of said some things he probably – shouldn't have said. I think that might have put more, you know, fuel to the fire.
Okay, and then finally the AFC East.
I mean, New England Patriots, man. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, enough said.
New England.
A play away, I have to say, a Butterfinger away of winning the Super Bowl. Butterfinger. Butterfinger, Wes Welker.
I think it's the Patriots, but I think folks need to watch out for the Buffalo Bills. But I don't think they are a threat to win the division, but the Bills are a threat to – I do think they make the playoffs, but that's New England's division. Toughest games they got is the Texans, Steelers, Broncos, 49ers. The absolute worst, they're 12-14. So, New England in the East.
All right. Okay, we got a call that wants to say make a statement. You got to be quick, though. 407.
Yeah, the Patriots probably going to take it on the East, though. I believe that. There's too much shakeups in the rest of the team on the East. I don't see nobody doing nothing but the Patriots, to be honest with you. Buffalo Bills, they straight, but, man, after how they looked last year, yeah, they brought in the new players, but, nah, man. Patriots got their hands down. He's right about that Butterfinger weight. Patriots got it. That's all right. I want to say on the East.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, wild cards. Who you got for your wild card? Tex.
It's difficult picking the wild cards, but just off my head, I'd say Ravens and either the Titans or the Bills. Probably the Bills. I like their quarterback a little bit better than I like the Titans quarterback, but probably Ravens, Bills.
Okay.
Kelly. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take the Ravens. And
I'm going to say the Ravens and the Jets.
Ravens and the Jets. Shottown, who you got? Wait. The Jets? You got the Jets? I had to think about the Jets. With that pathetic offense they got? You think Tennessee is going to play off?
They got a mountain offensive line, though, Clausell.
They got a horrible offensive line. Well, at least with pass protection, they got a horrible offensive line.
I mean, they're right tackle, but they still got Mangold, and you got the Rickshaw Ferguson. He's still there.
They had a tough time. But anyway, I want to hear what Mike Cali has to say about the Jets. I don't know, man.
It's something about the way that they didn't perform when everybody was expecting a lot from them. And I like to go with the opposites. I think that now that maybe, I don't know, the Tebow thing bothers me. I think it would be a better situation if he weren't there. But, you know, like I said, maybe this might add some fire under Mark Sanchez. And, you know, even though I don't think Tebow's a real challenge for him, maybe, you know, just not having the attention on him would be enough to, you know, light his fire and get this team going. You know, I know that they haven't been performing in preseason and camp like they should, but, you know, like I said, I don't know. This team, you know, they always have a lot of focus on them. And, you know, like I said, you never know what you're going to get out of these guys. They have the talent. So, you know, I got to see it on the field. But, you know, like I said, I'm going to go ahead and see, you know, put my faith in them, see what they can do.
All right. Shotown, did you make a prediction?
No, I didn't make a prediction. This one, I'm gonna say first the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning, you know, like I said, they'll toss up between that division, but I still want to say the Chiefs. And the second team, I mean, there's a couple of options on that. Comes down to the quarterback, who I feel comfortable with, team that made a noise. They got the little incentive that can get there. They was that close. I'm probably going to have to say the Baltimore Ravens being the second choice. You know, it was a tough one because I still wouldn't be surprised if the Jets or even the Cincinnati Bengals was my other two teams that I had right there. And Buffalo Bills is my triple extra wild card. I wouldn't be surprised if they get in either, but I say the Broncos and the Ravens.
Well, I got the Chargers and the Steelers as my wild cards. I want to get one more call in. I get one more call for 813 before we get into our predictions. 813.
I say the Ravens and the Broncos. The Broncos had a great team last year, even with a horrible quarterback. They got a very solid defense, so I see them being able to make the playoffs, and the Ravens are always there. So I would say the Broncos and the Ravens.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Now, we want to get to the part of the show where every member of the panel here gets 2 minutes to speak without being interrupted. And we want to start here with Tex. Tex, we want to start with you. You get 2 minutes to speak. Nobody's going to interrupt you. You can get started. You can go.
All right, first, I want to say I want to make sure that we understand that when Miami and USC have the players that they do define dominance in college football. And that's about it for this week.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. I mean, you got 2 minutes? Okay. If that's all you want to say.
Good. Just making sure we know. Get a man his money. Miami, USC.
All right, man. Shot-town. Mike, what you got to say?
Well, gentlemen, I'm just, looking on the tube of the news right now. They just said the NFL Players Association is rejecting rule changes. They just rejected Ohio players on IR, and they also, saying change for the trade deadline. So I guess what these changes mean, man, they back to square one again. Where I was hearing something, they were talking about if you be on IR, you still won't be out for the season. You still got a chance to come back. I kind of think that in a way they should change that. I mean, hey, football, it's a long, brutal, grunt season, and, hey, we all know you're going to get hurt. Ain't nobody going to be 100%. So I feel like they should make some changes to that. You know, if a player gets healthy in time before they make their run to the postseason or around that time, crunch time, they should be able to get back out there. So I feel, strongly on that. The trade deadline, well, hey, I mean, football is football. I think it takes time to learn a new scheme and system, and the way the trade deadline is now, I think it should be kept how it is. And that's pretty much about it I have to say about that.
All right, Callie, man, it's up to you.
It's pretty interesting. While I was perusing on my computer, I happened to look up Alabama in 1979. It seems that they were crowned the national champions that year, 11-1. Also won votes for the national championship by supporting sources, and they also won 11-1. The funny thing is, Houston and Alabama played each other, and would you know? Guess one. USC. So how can they blew out another team with the same record, not get to play for the match? These that make you go, See, when I'm hearing that there's no bias in college football, correct? Are you still there?
Oh, I'm still there. I'm giving you a time to talk. I'm not interrupting.
Oh, no, I wanted to hear what your response was. I want to hear what you think of that.
In regards to SEC bias?
And that's exactly possible for a team to claim the national championship over another team that's claiming the national championship, even though they got blew out by that same team. How is it even possible?
I got lost. You were breaking up. I'm sorry. I'm not joking either. You were breaking up. You say Alabama, USC beat Alabama. They blew them out?
Yes.
Are you talking about
the season 11-1? And claimed the national championship for 1979. USC also
was 11-1. I really can't explain that because I wasn't alive.
But you did earlier today. You just said all championships. You couldn't talk about Bear Bryant, all these other cats who were dead even before I was born. So I'm just asking. How is that possible?
I don't know, I mean, there was room for improvement. There was room for improvement.
Okay, but what does that say about the validity of any of Alabama's national champions?
I don't know. It depends what USC was, how they were playing for the rest of the year. I don't know how they were playing the rest of that year.
Well, I don't know how they were playing the rest of the year, but I know how they were playing during the Alabama game. They blew them
out. The first game of the year. Yeah. But I don't know. If you're talking about the national championship, you have to factor in all the games. So I don't know what they were doing the rest of those games. At the end of the day, they were the national champions. And they have more national championships than any other school in college football right now. So...
What does that say towards the validity of any of those national champions?
USC, they claimed the national championship when LSU won the BCS. So, I mean, what's the validity of USC's national championship when Reggie Brooks was an NFL player? I mean, I don't know. We can go on a Pandora's box of these validities of these national championships. But at the end of the day, we just have to stick with what the books say.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the steroids. You can go on a rampage on who took steroids, who didn't take steroids. But at the end of the day, the records are the records. But anyway, let me get to my points here, and then we're gonna have some rebuttal. Everybody can say something here. Now, the first thing is on the college tip with the argument with me, Mike from Cali, and Tex. I stick to my point here. Alabama right now is the Miami of the 80s. If they're not there, they're on their way to being the Miami of the 80s. And you know, in terms of what they're pushing into the NFL, the players that are in the NFL from the Saban era, you can see them emerging as future stars. Marcell Dareus, you can see that coming. Mark Ingram had a very impressive preseason. Julio Jones, you can see him emerging as a top five receiver coming up. So, and then the crop of players that are going to come in. I mean, these players are bona fide stars coming in the making. So, Alabama is definitely the Miami of the 80s, and they're pretty much at that level of USC in the late 2000s. I think, like I said, I'm not exactly sure. I think West Virginia is going to make a run for the Big 12 championship. I think they could potentially get to the BCS. I do think Geno Smith is a little bit better than Landry Jones. As far as the NFL, I think Roger Goodell does have too much power. He's getting on my nerves a little bit. I just don't like that whole dictatorship. I think there's a slight racial component to it, maybe. I just don't like it. You know, he's just being so hard on these players that are predominantly black, even though he did give Sean Payton a year suspension with, and also Greg Williams an indefinite suspension. I just think that was sort of a offset. Still, to, you know, he's still kind of too tough, and I don't like that. Anything else? I'm looking forward to the season. Looking forward to the conversations. That's it. Now, we got some quick comments. We only got about 6 minutes left in the show. There's a call here. 407. 407, you got something to say?
407.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
I just want to say a general statement. I'm just, I feel like the state of Florida had the most dominant football teams from the 80s all the way till now. Alabama, the SEC, and all that crap, they're doing something now. Who cares? But I'm just proud of the fact that black quarterbacks have risen in college football, because Florida State, I love them to death. Florida, I love them to death, but they wouldn't have started any black quarterbacks, and it was always under scrutiny. Bobby Bowden was racist. Steve Spurrier was racist. And they still racist to me in my book. But we're not going to get to those issues, but I just want to say I'm just happy that everybody's going to the black quarterback, and it's just a good time for me. I just love it. That's all I want to say.
Now, speaking of that, I want to say I made a comment last year. I want you to say online. I made a comment last year about Tim Tebow saying he's sort of the Elvis Presley or the, Eminem of the quarterbacks in the NFL. Because of his style of play, a lot of black quarterbacks had that style of play in the past, and they were shunned out of the NFL because of that style of play. But Tim Tebow, all of a sudden, is now allowed to – play like that, you know, and he's heralded. And I kind of want to know what's your opinion on my comment of that. Do you think there's some validity to that, caller?
The Tennessee Bowl being like the Eminem of the black quarterback?
Well, I mean, he's not a star like Eminem. You know, he's sort of like, meaning what I mean by that is he's sort of a white, like, for example, Eminem was a white rapper that covered black rappers, covered black artists, sort of like Tebow is the white quarterback that's covering the former black quarterback.
Well, I can't really say that because a lot of the black quarterbacks that were athletic had an arm. A lot of them were accurate. A lot of them could just do more than run. You know what I mean? Tim Tebow's mechanics, to me, is garbage and still is garbage. So, I mean, I really can't say that. I mean, Charlie Ward had a good arm. He could throw. Michael Vick definitely has a strong arm. He can throw. But the mechanics of Tim Tebow, yes, he's a super genius or whatever he is, or a super athlete or whatever they want to call him. But I don't know, man. I can't really – I'm not a big Tim Tebow fan. I mean, I just not. He's awesome. He's a good college football player to me, but he's just creating too many problems, man. I'm not a Tim Tebow fan. I can't ride with you on that one.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for calling. All right. Any comments you have?
I just, you know, on the Tim Tebow subject, the thing that was getting to me is what was going on at the University of Florida practices. I mean, when you got Tim Tebow lining up next to Cam Newton, what practice was everybody watching? I mean, I can't get around that. I mean, I never heard of Urban Meyer being accused of anything, but well, what was going on there? Was Cam Newton not even on the field, or was he asleep, or? You know,
but
they did have Chris Leak, though. I think talking about after the time when Chris Leak left,
it don't matter. Whatever Cam Newton was at UF, what was going on at those practices? Because he's way better than whoever else they had. I don't care who they had. He's better than them.
That's a good point. But I was going to say to the caller, though, he forgot, though, Bobby Bowden did have Charlie Ward, and Anquan Boldin was the quarterback when he was the head coach, so he definitely.
No, Anquan Boldin.
I wouldn't call Bobby Bowden racist. I think people don't fail to realize too about Steve Spurrier. He did recruit it. What's that dude? Dickey. I don't know his first name. Dickey,
yeah,
Dickey out of Florida
from Lincoln, Tallahassee.
Yeah,
right,
he had recruited him right after he had left to be their quarterback. So hey, I heard he was had a better upside than Chris Leak. He had a better arm than Chris Leak.
Hmm. Hey, I don't know. Devin Lincoln, they ran a more of an option style offense when I saw them play. Mm-hmm. But I understand what you're saying, though.
All right. Well, we definitely thank you for listening tonight. Make sure you check out our clipping of the show tonight on Block Talk Radio. We will be here every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please comment on our wall. We are on Facebook, CMT Firestorm. You know, give us some feedback. Thank you for listening. Have a good week, and we will see you next week. CMT Firestorm. Peace out.
Next week, y'all, call us. Have y'all opinion. Could I get that Henny? Could I get that margarita on a rock? Could I get salt all around that rum tray? I was like, yo, Trey, do you think you could buy me a bottle of rosé? Okay, let's get it now. I'm with a bad bitch. He's his friend. I don't say hi, I say key to the bin. Key to the bin? Key to the bin. Motherfucking right, yeah, B to the 10. If a bitch try to get cute, I'm a snuffer. Double out of money, out of done, y'all fucker. Then y'all fucker. Then I'ma go and get my Louis Vuitton. Excuse me? I'm sorry. I'm really such a lady. I've got young money. You know Slim, baby, and we be doing donuts while we raving, let's be 80. We give a lot of money to the babies out in Haiti. Yelling all around the world, do you hear me? Do you like my body? Anna Nikki. Rest in peace to Anna Nicole Smith. Yes, my dear, you're so explosive. Thank